Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hey, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Good. I've, of course, set off my Siri by doing that. Always weird. How are you doing?
That happened to my therapist last week, to be honest, over Zoom. My name activated her Siri.
It happens every time I say that in our intro. I say, hey, Shireen. See, just happened again. And my Siri always goes, yes. And then I have to be like, you, how dare you eavesdrop. But that's
not again.
That's why they're here, to take all our info.
Yeah, that's their only purpose.
Well, this is Ethnically Ambiguous.
It's a new episode. Ethnically Ambiguous welcome. This episode, we are joined by the wonderful Bushra Burney. We talk about her live show that is happening this week, the 20th through the 24th. We talk about how she found comedy, her move to LA, her family, and so much more.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hello!
Hi, Shireen.
Hi. How is your Monday going?
My Monday feels like a Wednesday for some reason. My mind is a little all over the place, but
I feel like every day now feels like a Wednesday. And that's like the worst day to feel like.
Why?
Right? I don't know. Like Wednesday has a certain vibe. Like Thursday's pretty chill. I feel like Thursday, I like. Thursday and Saturday are both chill. But then Wednesday and then Monday, I feel like have the same vibe where it's like, it's not over yet.
It's not. I don't know if that makes sense. Yet.
Days of the week have they have vibes. I'm sorry for how many times I'm saying
Wednesday's the day I wash my hair, so it always kind of makes me anxious.
Oh,
I hate washing my hair. I don't know why. I'm just very weird about it. It's a process.
I don't have designated weeks. I don't have a designated day of the week for my hair washing, but I do have designated days of the week for my retinol. So like Tuesday, Friday, Sunday. I've been doing retinol on my face, but now I'm like upping it to more than three times a week because I think I can handle it. But that's how I'm designating. The only way I know what day it is my skincare, is what I'm saying.
This is riveting stuff, huh? We really in hot. All right, really, let's just get the show started. This is just one of those Mondays where there is nothing that interesting to talk about except for, you know, the world burning down slowly but surely.
I will say today our Maz Jobrani episode dropped, and I'm really hoping you guys are enjoying that, y'all, guys and gals, and everything else in between, because he was a dream guest of ours and genuinely the nicest person in the world. The response has been really nice, and so I'm really glad you guys are liking it. Can I tell them who followed us on Twitter today?
Last night.
Or last night at like however, whatever a.m.
Yeah, very strange follow we got.
We got Jessica Alba started following us.
Very weird.
If you're out there listening, my girl, come on the show.
It was the last person I would think would follow it. Like it was, I saw it and I was like, what? I mean, hey, like I watched Jessica Alba movies growing up.
Oh, for sure. But you know what I did? I did some investigating, which is not really investigating. But if you look at Twitter on the web, on the internet, on your web browser, and you click on what someone's following, you can see who they've just recently followed. So we were up there. And then Florida Girls was also one of her recent follows. So I was like, maybe she started following us based off of one of the Florida Girls. Maybe she listened to an episode with Lacey or with Laura, or I don't know.
Fascinating. But, get the whiteboard out. I have the red string. We'll figure this out as we go.
But maybe next week is Jessica Alba on EA. You never know. You have to fucking stick around and find out. But today, I feel like more exciting than Jessica Alba. We have someone I've met for the first time maybe 8 minutes ago. And I'm really excited to get to know her as y'all are getting to know her as well. It's Bushra Burney.
Hey, everyone. Happy to be here.
Hi.
Yay. Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And we were connected to you through a previous guest.
Yeah, Zahra Nurbakhsh. She's my director, dramaturg. She's been working with me with the they're working on a one-person show called The Golfi Paradox. So we're performing that on Zoom next. Well, I'm performing that on Zoom next week. Nice. We're doing live virtual shows. So, you know, it's just been a way to pass time on quarantine. So it's been a lot of fun.
What's the date of the first show? October what?
October 20th through the 24th.
Nice.
Good to know.
Let's just start there, I guess. We can work our way back. But how did that show come about?
Well, I took a class with Zahra a few years ago, and I did this one, this is a 10-minute solo performance. And I feel like I wanted to tell a story that did my parents some good. You know, like, I feel like a lot of the immigrant parent stories, you know, they kind of like throw them under the bus and all that. So I wanted to do something to just kind of like honor them. So I reached out to her, and then we first was going to be another 10-minute thing. And then I turned into this one person show where I ended up talking about my life, and like personal stories ended up coming into it as well over the past year. So it's been really interesting to work on that, just really explore my feelings through the solo performance, you know, platform.
Yeah. And for those that aren't available for the live showings, are they going to be saved anywhere for people to see them later?
Anybody can just buy tickets off bushraburnie.com. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that was a plug. I may be recording some, depending on how it goes. But I feel like that this might just be the beginning. We'll see how things go. I feel like who knows how things are going to be for theaters in the future. At first, I was going to perform this on a stage as part of Hollywood Fringe. Mm-hmm. But this was kind of a way to adapt since everything mm-hmm. was just shut down. Yeah. And we don't know if even like theaters will exist the way they used to. So I feel like this might be just the beginning. If I don't record it now, hopefully, inshallah, future shows in the future.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. Okay, we're going to talk more about your show in a little bit, but I want to go back, kind of learn what your influences are, where you grew up, what your family life was like, because it sounds like you do kind of want to highlight the immigrant parent experience. Wow, that sounded like a play in itself, the immigrant family experience. But I mean, they do get thrown under the bus a lot. And I'm guilty of that as well. I blame a lot of my own issues on my parents, which, you know, I mean, it's part of it and whatever in my upbringing. But there is this kind of like very powerful thing about the immigrant parent in my mind of like they've accomplished so much more than I could even ever dream of accomplishing, which is that mm-hmm. whole like coming to a different country and starting a family, getting a career and like living here and like establishing themselves, which, yes, I moved from the Bay Area to LA, but like I didn't have to learn a new language or a completely different customs or, you know, have to study in a different world. I don't know. The whole idea of coming to this country and like going to school is also like, it blows my mind how anyone can do anything. Everything is, I'm very impressed by everything my parents have ever done. But let's just go all the way back. Where did your parents come from? Where were you born? Let's start there.
Yeah, so I'm from the Bay Area in California. Nice. So I was born there, but my parents are originally from Pakistan. And so they came here in the 70s. My dad had originally gone to Cal Poly mm-hmm. in the 60s. So he wanted to come back here and he knew California. It was sunny. So he was familiar with that. So they settled here. But, you know, part of being Pakistani is that there's that history of partition in 47 when everything split from India and Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So, like, I feel like part of my roots are India as well. And yeah. So for me, the show, it's not about partition, but I feel like it's just exactly like what you said. You know, they had to, you know, there's a new language. They had to settle here while we kind of reap the rewards of yeah. all the foundation that they laid. And now I can be an artist, a creator, and work on, you know, to tell their stories.
Yeah. I think, yeah, what Anna touched on is completely true. It's the immigrant parents are one of the most brave and strong and intelligent people out there because they have to start all over, acclimate, learn a different language. And growing up, it seems like a very strict way to be. And I think when you grow older, you realize the things that they've instilled in us. Like for I feel like we always talk about how, without even us realizing, our work ethic is largely due to seeing how our parents operated and how they just like had to create for themselves this life. And then we do it ourselves in our own way, despite like pursuing things that they wouldn't have necessarily wanted us to pursue. But I also want to talk about that. I think you being a comedian, you being interested in performing is pretty atypical for not just a Muslim woman, but a Muslim woman with a head covering, you know, with a hijab. So how did you realize that you wanted to be a comedian? And did you ever have that like awkward conversation with your parents where you were just like, this is what I want?
I think it's something I've denied myself for a really long time. And I do have a day job, and I still have the day job. It pays my rent while I'm trying to figure out my life here in LA. But I think, you know, even though all those times I wanted to write, it wasn't until a friend wanted to read what I wrote that I actually finished something that I started. So even though I've done a few performances, and it's very nerve-wracking to invite family, like they're coming to the upcoming show, it's still not quite something I think like my mom understands, but she's very open to it, to coming to these things. And I think part of it is I still do have the day job that mm-hmm. I can support myself. But I feel like that's kind of my tether too, where maybe I don't take that full plunge because I have that tether to my day job. But I feel like the more I've spent writing, performing, it's just, oh, this is just a really cool life. And I can't wait to tell stories. But what I realized, I wrote a play called Designated Muslim a few years ago, and it had a stage reading, and I got some really great feedback from the audience. But what I realized was that people just want to see more of these stories, you know, from people like me, from all sorts of people. People, they said they wanted to, they wish my play had more types of Muslims. And I was like, well, how many different people I'm supposed to write in one play? Like, I can just represent myself and my experience, but people are just clamoring for all these stories, and there's just room for so much out there.
Yeah. That's completely true. I think, when Rami came out, there were a lot of people that were just like, this isn't like looking to him to represent every kind of Arab or Muslim or Middle Easterner. And he has this quote that I'm going to paraphrase, but he doesn't want to be the only one. He shouldn't be the only show out there. Like mm-hmm. he should be one of many shows that explore what being Muslim is, that explore what being South Asian, Middle Eastern is, you know? So it's like, all you can do is represent your own story, and people will be attracted to that and then make their own. But hopefully each of us are one of many people doing our story justice, because that's the only story that really you can do. So I really admire that you decided to put yourself out there, because I think I can really relate to not really owning or like feeling that imposter syndrome a lot, like as a filmmaker or as a creative person, not really taking the plunge, because it's scary. It's really scary to think like, am I going to be able to survive and pay my rent without like working in production or working in the day job that I have? And even last week with the Maz episode, he talked about the same thing. He also had a tether, and we all take our plunge in a different way. So I'm just really excited for your family to like see your show and to see you kind of like in your element. It's worth noting, you know, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And I think one thing that really meant a lot to me was that when I first did my very first solo storytelling performance, a friend of mine from high school, we've been buddies for like 17 years. And she said that she had never seen that part of me before. And she was so proud. And I'm like, have I been suppressing that from my friends even for that long of a time? So it just opened up this whole other thing. Like, this doesn't have to be the only thing, the only class I've ever taken. Just like, where else can I take this without having to explain myself every single time? You know, like, you know, they say like, you stand up on stage, they want to know where you're from, you know, who you are. But open mic once, and I didn't say anything about hijab, being Muslim or whatever. I just started talking, and I'm like, okay, I can do this. I, you know, as long as I don't have to say the H word. And you know, the Kofi paradox, actually, I don't mention the word hijab once, mm-hmm. Which for me was like when I was editing it with Zara, I was like, it's not going in there. I'm not going to have an explanation of what this is and why I wear it, who doesn't wear it. I just don't want to do that. And let me just talk about kulfi, which I don't know actually if you guys know what kulfi is. It's this frozen ice cream like dessert. It's better than ice cream. It's from Pakistan. And I wanted to kind of honor that dessert in my show. It's one of my favorite things to make based on my mom's recipe. So
what's the recipe? Like, what is it made out of?
It's a secret. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, word. So, just, I mean, respect if that was the case. No.
You know, I would say it's a secret, but my mom shared it with a Pakistani community in the Bay Area. And I don't know how I feel about that, but it's already out there. Oh, so it's a lot of like heavy whipping cream, half and half sugar. So my mom makes it with cardamom but I use coffee and Oreos.
Oh.
So
I make my own what? Sorry?
Oreos.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I have my own version, my own, it's like my American Pakistani version of kulfi.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you're honoring a dessert. I love that so much. I will be honest. I didn't know what it was when I heard that word. But now that I know it's ice cream, chef's kiss.
Yeah. So
it's better than ice cream.
It's better than ice cream. Yeah. And they also make it with like saffron, or you can make it with pistachio.
Mm.
I feel like we have a version of it in Iran that's kind of like a rose watery, saffrony version.
There's a version in Syria too that I've had. If I'm thinking of the same thing, if it's like with heavy cream and whipping cream and stuff, the one in Syria that I remember the most is with pistachio.
Growing up in the Bay Area, like, what was that experience for you? I mean, for me, like, I grew up in an area where there were like no Iranians, there were no Muslims. There were like a few Iranians, but like I didn't really get to like see a lot of them in like my school or growing up. So I always felt like I, you know, was different. And like what you were saying, that your friends don't know this side of you. I feel like a lot of us just become so accustomed to fitting in that we're not as forthcoming with like culturally that side, like our cultural side. Like either like, you know, I grew up with a very devout Muslim mother, but like she also herself, she wouldn't walk up to you and be like, and I'm Muslim. You know, like everyone kind of had these parts of themselves that you kept to your family or your closest friends, or just, you know, basically inside your home, that you wouldn't actively put out to people. And I'm curious what your experience growing up in the Bay Area was like, if it was anything like that.
Yeah. So there are plenty of Pakistanis in the community. Mm-hmm. And the mosque that we went to was predominantly South Asian. And it was funny because I grew up thinking that Muslims are only like Pakistani, mm-hmm. because that's only really all I saw. And it wasn't until I got older, like, oh, it's like a worldwide religion with all sorts of people. But I never really actually fit into the Pakistani community, even like my school, my high school, there are plenty of Asians and all sorts of people that I never felt like I didn't belong as a person of color. But I think like even in how I am, like my interests, like I'd rather talk about comic books and movies than like the other stuff that some people in my community would rather talk about. But so I grew up not really feeling like I fit in. And, you know, my closest friends aren't exactly Muslim. Well, they're not Muslim. And so that was my experience growing up in the Bay, that it wasn't until college where I started, you know, getting together with the Muslim Student Association and just getting an understanding of what Islam, what Muslims, what they can encompass.
Yeah. I mean, I was raised Muslim and my entire family is Muslim. And it's, I was the only Syrian in my school other than my sister, who was older than me. So by the time she left, I was the only Syrian around. And for the most part, I think I was one of the first Muslims, if not like the only Muslim people knew, and definitely the only Syrian people knew. But, It's funny that you say that it's like it wasn't until you were older that you realized there were so many kinds of Muslims, because I think people also meeting me probably like would be like, oh, this is what a Muslim is. Whereas there's so many different like iterations of what that means. But when you started getting more involved in the community and college and the Muslim Student Association, Were you always interested in faith in that way? Because for me, I felt like a lot of pressure. Like I wasn't Muslim enough, or even though I was fasting, even though I was praying at a certain point, I felt like I was too Americanized at a certain point. Did you ever have that conflict?
When I was growing up, I had a very black and white perspective of religion. Like, this is right, this is wrong. So I feel like when I got older and I started educating myself, then I connected to the faith more. Where I always considered myself Muslim, it just was never a question. But then it wasn't until I started reading. And like, I didn't read a translation of the Quran until like my late teens, early 20s. It was just something I read in Arabic, which is, you know, you feel very disconnected from. But it never occurred to me to do that, to read the translations. And now, like, I feel like that when I've educated myself, I've like become more connected and things aren't as black and white. Like when I was maybe in early 20s, it was like Muslims do this, Muslims mm-hmm. don't do this. And that's it.
Yeah. You know?
And now it's
haram,
like,
halal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my definition of like, well, a Muslim is a person who calls himself Muslim. Whereas like maybe in my teens, I was like, oh, you don't pray? You don't fast? Is that okay? I was like, wait, yeah. I'm not that one to say if it's okay or not. So
yeah.
Let me just live my life and let everybody have their own, path to God.
Yeah, I think it's funny because in my interpretation of that, because I was also very like I operate on extremes. Like the minute I realized I didn't believe completely in the faith, I was like, I must not be a Muslim because this makes me, I'm out kind of thing. And that made me stray away very far from everything else. I stopped believing in God or whatever. And I mean, like, I think now I'm reclaiming the term Muslim as a culture more than anything else, because I do think it was like instilled a very particular culture in me, even though I don't know if I believe in anything religious wise. But it's funny that you bring that up, because I was definitely the same way. I was like, well, now that I've had pepperoni, I must not be a Muslim kind of thing. But we want to get more into your life. But let's first take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with Bushra. And we're back. Okay, so you're in college. What are you studying when you're in college? And how do you realize that you are interested in other things other than your studies?
Well, I was a good daughter. I went down that path of doing business administration, mm-hmm, MIS, yeah. Measurement Information Systems. And I graduated right when everything tanked in 2003. Like, before, they were just handing out jobs to you if you breathe, you know? And then it was like, there were no jobs available anywhere. I've always been down that path of like business. And right now I'm a project manager in my real life, I suppose. But
real life.
You know, the writing...
Yeah.
The writing and all that. Like,
that's true. It's like we live a double life. Like what Anna was saying, growing up, we don't share all of us. I think it kind of goes into leading this double life as an adult in a lot of ways.
And even like right now, I don't know how to introduce myself to people. I'm like it depends on the situation. Like when people ask you like what you do, like sometimes I say writer, performer. Other times I say project manager. Yeah. And then other times, like if I have 20 minutes, I'll go into the whole thing. Like, I started off as this, but I write some plays and I enjoy being on stage and just go through that whole thing. It's like when people ask where you're from and then you're trying to figure out what exactly they're asking. Like, do they mean L.A. or do they mean like what's your entire ethnic history? And, like how long do you have? Sorry, going back to college, like I didn't know until I graduated that I could have just taken my time and taken like writing classes. But I didn't actually really take my first playwriting class until a few years ago after I wrote my first play. Then I'm like, oh, maybe I should like look into this, see what I'm writing. So it wasn't really until my 30s that I really started exploring the creative lifestyle.
And were you kind of open with your parents about this, or were you kind of doing it, you know, on your own without allowing them to kind of have any sense of it?
Well, I don't think my mom understood what classes I was going to when I said I'm going to solo storytelling.
Yeah.
And then I'm taking like a playwriting class. It's just like, I'm taking this class. It's in Oakland. I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And then I didn't invite anybody from the family to the class show. I just couldn't do. That's just part of my life that I couldn't share with my family. And I just had no idea how they would receive it.
Mm-hmm.
So now my mom, like, she's coming to my show. She came to a table reading for my last play, which was just over Zoom. So it was like great to invite everybody. So it's just kind of cool for her to kind of see this side of me and just know what I'm capable of. But just to backtrack a few years, my first stage reading for Designated Muslim, you know, she was sitting up front and I just had to stay, you know, just sit in another part of the theater. I'm like, I don't need to know what's going on over there, what she's feeling. I'm just going to sit here in the corner and I might ask her how she liked it, but I don't need to know.
Yeah. Did you ever find out how she liked it?
Yeah, she liked the play. So my first play, Designated Muslim, she really liked that. And then I did a table reading recently for my new play. It was called The Evening Repast. And she really liked that one as well. You know, I just called her up and after it. And she seemed to be more enthusiastic. I think she had an understanding now of what these are and, you know, my writing. And this was like the second thing I completed. So for this one, for Goofy Paradox, I'm a little bit more on edge because I'm actually performing. I'm not just in the audience with everybody else while other people perform my work. Yeah. So this is going to be a little bit more interesting, definitely. But she'll be at the first show, so that on the October 20th. So I'll just eat plenty of Goofy and ice cream afterwards to just console myself.
In preparation and in consoling.
Of course, yeah.
But I think it's an interesting thing to bring up is in our leading these double lives, we're not only hiding ourselves from our peers, like the side of ourselves, whether it's your comedic side or your cultural side, but you're also hiding a big part of yourself from your family, you know, like a big part of your creative self, your performance self. The first couple times I did comedy, it happened to be recorded and I wanted my parents to just see it, to just see me on stage for the first time. And so I sent it to them. It was this kind of the same reaction that your friend had, being like, I didn't know that you liked this. I didn't know you could do this. And even though I wasn't like, I don't think I was good. It's like your first couple of times, you're not going to be good. But to have them see you in a different light, to see them, to have you shine in a different way to them, I think it's really important because it's something that brings you joy. And I think they can see that in you when it's happening. And I think creative pursuits aren't necessarily encouraged with immigrant families because it's not necessarily seen as necessary to survive, because for them, they come here and they do everything just to be stable and to survive. To them, it's like money, food, shelter,
health insurance.
Yeah. I'm excited for you. Being nervous is normal. Obviously, but the ice cream will help. And also, I think sharing that side of you is so necessary and pivotal to both of, like, to grow as a person for yourself, to be the person that your child self needed growing up, and to also just like grow with your parents and your family. And I don't know, representation has so many different layers to it that are so important.
Yeah, and I feel like it's on us to like tell our parents' stories and just even our background, just because I feel like in America, they don't know about like maybe the traumas like our parents' generation or our ancestors went through, unless there's like a Hollywood movie about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that instills, that's something in us, you know, like my parents grew up super poor because of like what happened with India and Pakistan. And that probably affected my dad and how he grew up and the experiences that he had and what he wanted from life. Because as a 7-year-old, he was in a refugee camp trying to get himself to Pakistan. And then when I was 7, I mean, I wanted to be a paleontologist. So it's just like to be able to dream like that because my dad had to go through what he went through when he was 7 is just something that I don't appreciate until now. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that even like with a lot of countries out there with a lot of people. Like I said, I only thought Muslims used to be like South Asian. And then just even like traveling more, getting an understanding that there's all these other Muslim countries with all these people who look so different. Like one of my favorite countries to visit was Bosnia. And just like there's like these white European Muslims, like it's just mind-blowing even to me to just see all of that. And I don't think the American audience or just people in general have an understanding of like who all of us are. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell that story. I want to tell them about these things that they don't know about. And I want to like take in media, movies, books, films about stuff that I don't know. I want to understand everybody else's experiences too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, Islam and Muslim get the classic like terrorism stereotype in this country. And it's like, you don't even know. In this like this people who like have such a basic understanding of Islam, it's like, that's not it. It's so expansive and wide ranging. And like, I believe the biggest Muslim population is in Indonesia. Yeah. It's not, mm-hmm. you can't just like look at the Middle East and be like, you know, that's Muslim land or whatever the fuck these, you know, people have assumed about Islam and what it is to be a Muslim. It's, you know, I feel like people, my mom is a very light skinned woman. She's an Iranian full, you know, immigrated to this country, but people treat her in a way that my mom is so patient with these people who will say really, really fucked up things to her. Like, because they don't want to know that she's Muslim and don't really know she's an immigrant because she's very, very, very white passing. My mom is a very pale woman who has light hair, complete opposite of my dad, who the second you meet my dad, people could, I mean, I'm sure he experiences just like blatant racism towards him because he's very dark skinned. He has a very thick accent and he is rude. But other than that, like he, like my mom, people will say things to my mom like, well, you're not like Muslim like that. Like right. They've said these things to my mom. Mom's like, I pray five, like you think I'm going to the bathroom at work. I'm going to go pray. Like I am very strict. Like you just assume because I'm light skinned and look a certain way that yeah. like I'm not one of those Muslims. And she like tells me these stories of like, yeah, that like I remember like going places with her, but she'll be like, that coworker, stay away from you. Like he has said some wild things to me. And it's like, it's the worst. And I hate this, these preconceived ideas. And of course, you know, 9/11, all these, you know, movies, any sort of like Western media about like Islam is a mess. Like TV shows, like this new TV show on Apple TV, Tehran, which just fucking Christ. It's by the same people who made Fauda. I watched one episode because I just had to know what bullshit they were spewing now. And I just hate it. Like, there's so very few people do it right and make it clear and give true experiences that, like, matter and not just, like, kind of stereotypical fluffed up bullshit, if that makes sense. And it's very frustrating. You can't help but feel alone.
Yeah. We've had an episode about Fauda where I talked about how much I hate the creators of that show, if you guys want to look that up. But the fact that they made another show demonizing Middle Easterners, first it was Palestinians, now it's Iranians.
Just whoever's on the hit list of, they need to be demonized. It's like as if these people have not been demonized enough and they're just citizens of this world. I don't know. I hate that people just don't have a chance. And we people like us have to take it into our own hands and be like, this is not right. This is the real world. These are what true human experiences are. And just because you've seen something or heard something does not make it correct.
Yeah. And to go to what you were saying earlier, I think there are so many kinds of Muslims. Like my dad has blue eyes. Everyone's always shocked by that for some reason. I have cousins with red hair. They're also shocked by that.
Yeah.
We're all different kinds of people. And there's this really, what is really troubling to me that I think perpetuated this idea that Muslims are dangerous is this term moderate Muslim.
Absolutely.
It made it sound like Muslim on its own is inherently violent, is inherently extreme, is inherently strict and regressive. So moderate Muslim is kind of what they're saying to Anna's mom, being like, you're not like them. Like you're like a cool Muslim. You're liberal, right? Like cool you don't cover your hair. You must be a moderate Muslim because even every news outlet has said that term, not just Fox News, not just CNN, everything. That term has been thrown around and it has made it seem like being Muslim on its own is extreme. And people, again, don't realize it's one of the three most populous religions in the world. There are so many Muslims, and it's the true teachings are peaceful and beautiful. And despite not me not believing in God now, I can't deny the beauty of like going to Saturday school and like going to mosque every week. And I get so frustrated when people just hear something and run with it. But that's, I mean, I can rant about that term moderate Muslim.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I wrote this whole thing in my last play about like moderate, like, you know, friends who misunderstand each other. Like, oh, well, you're fine. You're a moderate Muslim. Like, oh, no.
Right.
Know, that's, the problem is that Muslims describe themselves like that too. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't help. But that term, yeah, it just grates.
Well, it's also unfortunate because the status quo or the people that have power, they make us play against each other that way. When Sikhs are targeted, for example, we'll be like, well, they're not even Muslim, or like, that's not the Muslim kind of turban. Like, they make us play against each other because there's unfortunately like a colorism hierarchy. There's so many different kinds of things. At the end of the day, as sad as it is, it's a way of protecting ourselves and not wanting to be demonized. So I hope eventually we stop playing into that narrative of needing to qualify ourselves or be like, well, I'm one of the good ones, you know, like, no, like there are a handful. When you really think about the amount of Muslims in the world, there's a handful of extremists, and they've just so happened to perpetuate the narrative of every other news outlet out there. You know what I mean? Also, speaking of, the Taliban recently endorsed Donald Trump, if you need more reason to not vote for him.
I was good. I was already good on my decision to not vote for
right.
him. But yeah,
that's but just, I do not not you. I was talking to you. But I'm also just angry at people like voting third party or writing in a candidate or voting Green Party. I think it's pretty. I don't want to get into this too much. But I know there's like an election coming up, but I think that decision is very selfish and privileged.
And you know, because I've always thought, who does the Taliban endorse?
Yeah.
What a thing that's never in my fucking life crossed my mind.
It's not in the voter guide, so no. I mean, how would we actually even know?
Yeah.
Absurd.
Anyway, we've gone on so many tangents, but let's go back to you. So your show is coming up and you're probably preparing for that in one way or another. But let's go back a little bit to working with Zahra and how that collaboration, because you mentioned you guys had a class together, right?
Yeah, she was my teacher in a class that I took a few years ago. So I had reached out to her to ask her to kind of like direct me, to guide me on the new piece. So then it just became this collaboration where she became my director and dramaturg. And she's been with me on this for like 2.5 years, I think, just like
incredible.
This evolution of like, oh, I just want to do something about my family, to seeing it evolve. And I think without her, like, I mean, she gives me a lot of credit, but I have to give her a lot of credit too, where I would text her about stuff. I'm like, this thing happened. Like, long story short, I went on medical leave last year and that made it into my show. Because I texted Zahra about the doctor I saw in urgent care and all the stuff he was saying to me. And she's like, that has to go in your show. So the Golfi Paradox became like this exploration of just everything that I've been through. And in like my parallel, like with my parents, of just like I have emails and spreadsheets that stress me out. And then my parents had to go through like, you know, like a new land and then coming to the United States and starting over again. But it's funny. I swear it's not like this depressing one person show about how I went on medical leave. But you know, with the collaboration with Zahra, it was really great where I would just bounce ideas off of her. And she's able to tell me like, this is the kind of stuff that would go in the show. This is why we would bring it up this way. And even if we need to fictionalize, just like bridge gaps. So that collaboration has been just really great for me. And it's almost like getting a masterclass on how to like, even like edit, perform, and just be, you know, on stage as a person of color.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's cool. Zahra's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that you have, I think it's the importance of representation too, is because you were able to connect with someone that you felt a kinship with, and she was able to validate you in a way that I think a lot of us creatives really need, and especially creatives of color that like are not represented. But yeah, so your first show is the 20th, which is this week, and it goes to the 24th, and tickets are on bushraburney.com.
Yeah, everything's on bushraburney.com, and use the promo code Oreos for $10 off the ticket. It all makes sense in the show, but I tell you, like, part of my kulfi recipe includes coffee and kulfi, so Oreos too. Sorry, I got
coffee and Oreos.
But yeah, yeah. My Twitter started promoting Oreos to me after I started promoting Oreos through
of
Twitter.
Course,
so,
of course,
because you know, I don't know what Oreos are, but
cool. Yeah. So your parents, they're coming to watch it. Do you think a part of them being so accepting is knowing that you have a day job, that you're doing this? Like when did you move to LA, and like, what was the reaction to that?
First, I should say that my dad passed away. So He's actually doesn't even, he never knew even about this aspect of my life.
Interesting. Okay. But I'm sorry to hear that.
No, it's okay. Thank you. But I do talk about him and my relationship to him in the show. So I did move to LA last year, and it was just kind of part of this move where my mom was selling the family home. And I was like, let me do the LA thing. And especially since I was able to just transfer my day job over to LA. So that just made it really easy.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Coming over to LA, meeting a lot of like people in the entertainment industry, like South Asians in entertainment, being part of these groups, just finding community here in a way that I've never been able to in the Bay Area has been really great. But although, you know, with COVID and shelter in place, it just kind of really put a damper on things. But, you know, instead now I'm finding more community through Zoom stuff, classes, a lot of these things that people are putting together. But when my mom knew that I was pursuing this, you know, just as long as I had the day job, as long as I can support myself, I think that made it better. But every time I would go to these events, every time I would meet new people, I would be able to just tell her, like, I'm meeting these people, I'm doing these things, taking these classes, just to kind of like assure her that this move means something and that I'm trying to do something with it. And I didn't just abandon family in the Bay Area, which I still feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard to let go of that guilt because, or just like familial obligation, because family is so important in like Middle Eastern and South Asian culture, like just like the Swana region, and also just immigrant families in general. Like the importance on family is so pivotal, because in a lot of ways that's all you have, especially if like me and Anna, like our parents were the only ones that immigrated to America out of their families.
Same with mine.
Yeah, exactly. So family becomes this core of everything. And it's hard to not feel guilty when you stray or when you move too far away. And even now, like I have dreams of moving to like the Pacific Northwest. But in my brain, that's like, that might be too far from my parents. Mm-hmm. And they're very important to me. And I don't want them to get older and me to be far away and not have the time I want with them. So it's just like, it's interesting to think about priorities that have been instilled in us just by the nature of who we are, kind of thing, versus the freedom that I think a lot of like white Americans must feel when it comes to growing up. But at the end of the day, I really value the importance that family plays in our lives.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, definitely, I didn't really appreciate that, I think, until I moved here and I realized how much I took family for granted. I'm very introverted. But when I want to interact with people, it was so easy. And like in the Bay Area, I'll go to my sister's place, hang with nephews and nieces, go downstairs and hang with my mom, you know?
Yeah.
But over here, it's like, especially with COVID, my introversion has just been stretched. And I'm like, oh, I need people.
Yeah.
So family was that built-in thing that I just totally took for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think recognizing it now is, it's good to realize that eventually. And I'm excited. I mean, connecting on Zoom is what we got to do. And they're going to see your show on Zoom. So I think it's really exciting. But we're going to take one more break. And we'll be right back with more Bushra. And we're back.
So I'm curious, do you think you want to just try and make a career out of writing and performing like this? Or do you think you'll try and just keep the day job? Or is it just kind of like feel it as you go? Like where do you see yourself go? I'm just like curious because like I went through this kind of same thing when I moved to LA and I didn't know what I was going to end up doing. Like I would go back and forth a lot of like, just have a fucking real job. You know, because it's like you can't help but hear your parents in the background being like, well, how will you support yourself? What happens if this happens? What if you get in a car accident and your arm is severed off and you know, it's just like all these the worst case scenarios you could possibly think that my mom has put in my mind. But yeah, I'm curious how you feel about all this.
You know, it'd be amazing to make a living as a writer and performer.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so many opportunities out there and a lot of different perspectives that are needed. And, you know, I always think of like, I don't know if you guys saw Watchmen on HBO, just hearing about that writer's room and how that all played out. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. You know, I want to be part of that where everybody's experiences are are held and, you know, just help shape the story. And I think that's what I would want to do eventually, just be one of the voices and get my story out there. And even even past something like Kofi Paradox, which is so personal, but just I just enjoy writing. Like I was taking a sketch comedy class, one thing that Zahra kind of forced me to take with her. And I was like, oh, I love this. This is fun, you know, writing sketches and just getting validation too, almost from like the teacher, like, oh yeah, I don't have any notes on this. Oh, cool. This is nice. And, but I think it's just one of those things where I'm sure one day I'll have to make that decision because definitely the day job does take its toll. But I do appreciate that in times of COVID, if anybody's hearing from work, just the, you know, just being able to pay rent has been amazing. And without that, but like, I do think that this is going to be my new normal of just trying to hustle too on the side.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, I don't want to, it took me until my 30s to just start writing regularly. And I don't want to wait too much longer to just keep on doing the stuff I enjoy. So I just want to continue all of this, the writing, the performing, just meeting people who are into in this industry. And even so it's very fulfilling.
Yeah, I agree.
I really am inspired that you started writing regularly in your 30s because I'm perpetually terrified of like time running out and comparing like what I've achieved to like my younger self or not having achieved enough by X amount of time. And I have a really hard time writing. I have so many projects that I haven't finished because I just simply have not been able to be productive right now, even though I have all the time in the world. But I really admire that you didn't feel like it was too late and you didn't feel like you it's because I have those anxieties all the time. And I'm just really excited for you to go on this path because as a creative person, I can really relate to those feelings. And I think the hustle is real. I think all of us have hustled hard in LA and doing the most. I've done the most random jobs. I've done the most and I still do the most random jobs to pay rent. And for a long time, I didn't want to give up my health insurance because I was doing this like production gig for years. But at the end of the day, it's like we just have to keep hustling until something clicks and until something lands. But yeah, I just really admire you and your pursuit of your passion because it gives me hope that like it's all gonna be okay. And as long as we're doing something that we enjoy, that's all that matters. Like that's really all that matters. And we got it. And I mean, it would be an amazing world if we didn't have to keep a job for the health insurance, if we didn't have to, if we lived in a place where health insurance was available readily. Like it's just so unfortunate the tethers that we need to justify even pursuing something else, if that makes sense. But yeah, I just really, look up to you and admire your pursuit.
Yeah, I think the biggest revelation I had was that I can't do it by myself. And when I was just relying on me, then I didn't write. It was always something I wanted to do. But then, you know, I finally wrote something down, just like one scene from I didn't even know what it was. And then a friend was like, oh, can I read it? I'm like, oh, does this mean I need to finish it? And eventually that's how I wrote my first play, but because somebody was waiting for it. But I think if I was just left to my own devices, I would not have done anything.
Yeah, it does help.
Yeah, that's the thing. Left to my own devices, I'm bad. I'm bad at holding myself accountable. We need people to hold ourselves accountable.
Though I hate a deadline. There's nothing more terrifying than a deadline just looming.
Right. Yeah, but you know, with the thing with deadlines, though, I feel like that without that,
I know, like, it's what we need.
We did this workshop show for Gulfy Paradox back in March. And even though I'd been working on it with Zara for like 2 years, it got so developed in the few weeks that led up to that show that like it was just astounding. Yeah. And of course, I was like right before everything shut down in March. And then I got that taste of being on a stage. I'm like, this is amazing. And like, and never again. So, and I feel like we just kind of need those deadlines. Like if I didn't have these classes, I finished the TV pilot during COVID because I was taking a class and I needed to have my acts written it up, you know, by class so people can read it. So deadlines are horrible.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I still haven't finished a pilot that I have been trying to finish for like a year. And maybe that's the trick. Maybe that my self-imposed deadlines aren't cutting it and I need to...
I mean, I think taking classes really helps. Like I took sketch writing classes at UCB a few years back because I just wanted to see if it was something like, you know, like I took writing classes in college, but like, I want to know, can I write sketches? Like, am I capable of like heightening? And, I mean, like having like a weekly deadline, I wrote like 10 to 15 sketches that I was like actually proud of. I mean, not that I'm ever going to make anything, but like it was nice to just like have that exercise and just taking those classes just kept me accountable. You know, like I had to show up and they were other people were going to read my sketches. So like I have to give them something good because I also don't want to, you know, it's also like a pride thing. It's like, I don't want to look like a fool in my class. Like, oh, she's not even trying. So it helps like having other people and it's just like more than one person who's going to observe your work. Like it builds you up to be like, well, I have to do this and I have to do it well. So and then you surprise yourself every time. You're like, oh, I can do this. I can actually do this. Like
that's probably the most beneficial thing.
Yeah. Getting like good feedback. You're like, oh, I'm so hard on myself because I can't help it because I've spent my whole life like either, you know, trying to just like find who I am and what I like and like fit into this world that all you needed was someone being like, hey, man, that was great. And you're like, oh, my God, you have no idea how much I just needed to hear that because the weight of the world would sit on my shoulders and be like, can I write this?
Yeah, I relate to that so hard. I relate to just like the slightest compliment being like, really? Okay. Like, it's all I needed to hear.
It's like, I have it.
I think the biggest problem, too, though, is if it's the opposite. Like, if we hear that piece of feedback that just kind of just brings you down.
Oh.
Like, when I first submitted my first play, Designated Muslim, and, you know, you hear about, like, oh, we want to hear these stories. We want to hear these diverse stories. Sorry, I can't speak. Diverse stories.
It's okay.
And the feedback that I got from this one place was, like, none of this would ever happen. And that just messed me up. And I was like, I don't know if I have it in me to be a writer. Mm-hmm. They're like, we like the dialogue. We like this, but none of this would ever happen. So if you could just change everything up. And it's just so disheartening that like, like if my experiences as a immigrant kid or like, you know, kid of immigrants and like a Muslim, like if you can't comprehend that those would happen and you're the decision makers, where am I going to even go in this life?
That just goes to show that white people being the gatekeepers of so many things is so detrimental to people of color, because they look at our stories and be like, yeah, right. Like, I don't relate to this, so this must not be real. So hopefully as the industry progresses, I hope it does, we have less white gatekeepers and more gatekeepers that don't gatekeep at all. And they are interested in hearing about experiences that are not their own.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious that just because someone doesn't relate to something, usually if a white person doesn't relate to something, they must not think it's real.
The worst. It's the worst.
Yeah. But I'm stoked for your show. I'm stoked for your family to see it. I'm stoked for everyone else to see it. And I'm really glad that we got you on the show before it happened, because we can promote it and we can get all our listeners on the show or watching the show. So before we completely sign off, let's just remind everyone where they can get tickets and where they can follow you for more information as well. And just tell everyone where you're at.
Yeah, so you can find tickets for The Gulfy Paradox on my website at bushraburney.com. So that's BUSHRABURNEY.com. And I'm on Instagram and Twitter. I'm Bushra Writer. That's WRITER. At the end, it sounds like writer, like I ride motorcycles or something, but that's not quite it. Other information is out there. I'm really excited to, just show people this show. And just like it's on Zoom, I'm using multiple cameras, so I'm just not at my desk.
Wow.
That's been interesting too, to be my own camera person.
That's so fun.
And with Zara directing me over Zoom, and she's like, no, do this, no, do that. I was like, I don't, what? But so this has been a really great experience.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fun.
I like that. I like seeing the more, as Zoom becomes more like part of our daily ritual, innovating.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen photo shoots getting directed over Zoom, but at the end of the day, you do have a lot of control as the person that's setting things up and everything. And so I'm glad that I'm excited about these multiple cameras. Now I'm intrigued. That sounds really fun to me. But I'm so grateful that we got you on just in the nick of time.
Yeah.
So everyone,
and also, sorry, just as a reminder, shows are from October 20th through the 24th.
Yes.
So
check it out.
Everything's on the website.
Yes. 20th, 24th. So the first one is tomorrow. So get your tickets at bushraburney.com and follow
the link
for more information.
Will also be in our description, so you can easily get to it.
Awesome.
Scroll down to the footnotes, the description, it'll all be there. I hope you guys tune in, because we need to shine a light and support the voices that we want to be heard and represented. So yeah, it's important to support, because that means more of these stories will be told. I'm excited. I'm very excited for you.
Oh, thank you.
And for me to watch it.
I would love for you guys to attend.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. 100%. I'll be there every night. No, I'm just kidding. Not every night. But I'll be there at least once.
Awesome.
I'll be there every night looking at you directly into your eyes.
Well, I can't really see people while I perform.
You'll see me.
So.
I'll find a way.
Yeah.
I'm just, I will not distract you. You will be in the zone.
I perform to the void, which is interesting.
That is interesting.
Cool. That is
you're right. That is a weird kind of way to debut a show, I'm sure. But there's a silver lining there, where I feel like there's a universe where however many months or whatever we can perform in person again, you can probably have this perfected in a way that this is kind of another way to workshop it. I can't think of another word, but another way to kind of to perfect it. And I'm excited for you to eventually do it in person. But in the meantime, this is a great way to show people what you can do. Because at the same time, we shouldn't wait for anything. We should just do it.
I
think waiting is another excuse in a lot of ways. So I'm proud that you're not waiting and you're just going for it.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate
and
that.
Also, we need this. Especially now, we need a good laugh and a good show to escape. And also, just you're providing us a great service in a lot of ways. So thank you.
Oh, nice. You're welcome.
I'm going to wrap us out now. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm so grateful that Zahra connected Anna and you and me. And any last words before I plug the pod?
No, just thank you guys so much for having me on. I really enjoy this.
You're welcome.
Of course. Of course, Bushra.
Yeah,
of course.
You got to come back. You got to come back post-show. And hopefully in person we can also do this. And we can meet in person too.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
I think that's something that I do miss about in-person recordings is that we don't actually... I can never meet someone for the first time for real. But until then... This is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm just at Anna Hosea on Twitter.
And until next time, watch the Kulfi Paradox and follow her. And yeah, enjoy.
Enjoy.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.